I think the biggest challenge we face with sustainability is community and getting along with other people. I think we can do our whole, you know, like, I am just this eco-groovy eco-person that's doing my thing. And then it's like getting along with that neighbor who's spraying Roundup on the edge of your driveway. How do we bridge that gap, and how do we connect and move forward together, mutually beneficial relationships?
Welcome, everybody, to the Here Together podcast. We're your hosts, Charles Matthews
and Kelly Roberge.
And we're obsessed with the big question. Can we live together sustainably? And if so, how?
The reason we're obsessed with this question, these questions, is because we know there are thousands of people out there right now looking for, pining for a more satisfying, engaged, supported, and sustainable life and living situation for themselves and their families. And maybe you are one of them.
We know so many people who simultaneously feel blessed and privileged with a good, secure, abundant life, but they know they are missing something. This single-family lifestyle has caused so many of us to trade away community, mutual support, and joy for the illusion of autonomy, abundance, and safety.
There's an ache in our bones for a life that is more connected and meaningful, a life that sees us giving more of our gifts and that leaves more
and less
of an impact on our world. If you feel that same ache, you're in the right place.
Kelly and I are on an expedition to find a way to live that strikes the right balance between privacy and community, connection and freedom, and leaves a much lighter footprint on the earth and the climate. There's not much time.
On this season of the Here Together podcast, we'll be curating conversations with the people who are living in eco-villages, developing new co-housing communities, inventing
or rediscovering
low-impact technologies, and even designing new ways of living together. We're talking with people who are at the forefront of sustainability science and human design to get answers for us and for you about how regular people can break out of the suburban box and live in a way that makes sense to our bones.
So this episode might seem like a bit of a diversion. Our guests this time aren't necessarily living in co-housing, but they're both deeply immersed in creating a rich, sustainable community in Santa Barbara, California.
Bill Cloutier is the public relations director of an environmental education and arts nonprofit called Explore Ecology. We might call that EE for short. EE works with over 30,000 children a year with a focus on watershed education, school gardens, waste reduction, and creative exploration, my favorite. Their work inspires children to engage with the natural world, think critically, and experience the value of environmental stewardship. Jill is a podcast producer, video maker, and writer. Her podcasts focus on plants and permaculture. Permaculture is a really important concept that contributes to biological, agricultural, and household sustainability, and we're really excited for Jill to help us understand that term and how we can practice it at small and medium scale to improve our lives and our impact.
We're also here with Rachel Palmer, who is the arts coordinator for EE and is in charge of the Art from Scrap Creative Reuse Store and Gallery and the associated arts programs. Rachel is a fiber and print artist, educator, and self-proclaimed podcast fanatic. She is the story editor for the podcast with the best name I've ever heard, Copper and Heat, a James Beard award-winning podcast exploring the unspoken rules and traditions of the kitchen.
That is after your own heart, isn't it, Charles?
Don't use your chef's knives to open cans.
Oh my goodness, no. Don't do it.
Use them on the dishwashers, but only when nobody's looking.
No. Right. Well, I'm all about the upcycle, and yeah. Charles is all about the permaculture. So this is a conversation we're very excited to have. I can't wait to see where it goes and what we can learn today from our guests.
Yeah, welcome, Rachel and Jill. Thank you so much for being with us here today.
Thank you so much for having us.
And you guys are in sunny Santa Barbara?
Yes, sunny with no rain in sight.
Oh,
unfortunately.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, problems. Well, I listened to your podcast, Jill, with the guy who installs meadows instead of lawns. And that was one of the things you talked about how important it is to have actual ground cover to absorb, living ground cover to absorb the rain when it does happen. but not these, you know, monoculture lawns that, as he puts it, just sort of poisons the land that they're on. So I'm excited. We've been talking about moving. While I was listening to that podcast, I started Googling native plants and native plant nurseries in and around Utica, where we're going to be hopefully relocated in the next couple of months. So, because there's plenty of lawn in Utica, then we need to get some native plants in there for sure.
Yeah, I would like a meadow for a yard much better than I would like gravel for a yard.
Yeah, exactly.
I have friends who have a food forest. They have a giant, a normal suburban size yard, and then they have a giant food forest in the back, and then they have about a 5x5 yard in the front. This tiny little strip where they sit out on chairs, and then the rest is just surrounded by other plants. So you can have your yard, maybe just not make it so huge, right?
You can have your yard and eat it too.
Yeah.
Say a little bit about what is a food forest? Our listeners may not have heard that term before.
So a food forest is where you basically, it's something that is very popular in permaculture and ecological landscaping and design, where say you have even if you have a tiny little yard, instead of planting ornamentals, you actually plant edibles. And so you would plant even if you have like one tree in your yard, instead of having this lone orange tree all by itself, you would plant other trees that would maybe support that tree's health. Then you could plant things in layers. So you might have your trees, then you'd have your berries that can grow up the tree or close by. Then you can have the lower layer, which is like comfrey or herbs or different plants. So it's really like an integrated, biodiverse forest, but of edible plants and medicinal plants and some ornamentals in there as well.
Right. Sounds lovely. That sounds lovely.
I want one.
Yes. Shall we get into the podcast?
Yeah,
proper?
Let's get into it, as Pete Holmes would say. So we always start off with our little centering question, because there's such a big part of sustainability involves that tension between individuality. My mouth isn't working right today. Individuality and community, privacy and sharing. We would love to know from both of you, did you have to share a bedroom when you were growing up?
Great question. I did not share a bedroom when I was growing up. I had my own. I have a little brother and we would fight like cats and dogs. So our parents, I think for everyone's sanity, kept us separate.
Was there something you did have to share?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I feel like a lot like space, a shared space or a shared
anything.
Thing.
Yeah. We're just curious how what sharing means to your young self.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I grew up with a lot of cousins around who, you know, so I feel like all of my things, my clothes, my, you know, all of my extra stuff was a lot of shared or things that were a second life. I grew up, my family lives in England, so I had a cousin in England. And every year or so, I'd get a box of her clothes sent over. Or when we visit, I'd get her clothes. And it was always very cool, like, oh, stuff that's better than the stuff in America. Like, I have my European clothes that I got. And I was like, beyond excited to get these clothes for my cousin that were all her cast off stuff that she had grown out of. So that was a big positive sharing experience in my childhood.
And now you're doing that on a ginormous scale.
Absolutely.
At our
right?
age
crap. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm always thinking about ways clothes can have second, third, and fourth lives.
Right. Right.
Ooh, I love it. Yeah. How Jill, did you navigate sharing?
Oh my gosh. I shared a room with my sister for many years until I was in junior high. And so we usually got along great, but then my mom often always says, do you girls remember when you'd have like a line of things across the room?
like
this
in the
is
middle?
My side in the middle. This is my side of the room. That's your side. But we shared often, like we shared the room for so long and we shared clothes with our older sister. So we get hand-me-downs and, you know, and I came from a family of four other kids. And so there was a lot of sharing going on.
Yeah, that's
I think
great.
It's good training, right? I think it's right. good training for later in life.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, we've asked that question multiple times already, and I think I'm just now really getting underneath that question and the idea of like, how do you navigate sharing? How do you feel about sharing? What is the benefit? What is the downside? You know, it's such a complex question. And I was an only child, so I didn't have to share much. I was an only grandchild on one side. So I had the adults in my family to myself. I had space to myself. I had space and time to think things through. And that really affects who I am. But just like you, Rachel, I love a hand-me-down. So
Yeah. And when I was little, sharing with my sister felt like a loss. It felt like I was giving up something because I was the older one. So I was like, I was always share with your sister. And now as a middle-aged person, I'm like, I don't want to own a weed whacker. I don't want to own any of this. I don't want to own a car.
Right.
Like somebody please make it so I can share with other people and not have to take care of all of this stuff. My possessions have become a burden to me.
Especially tools. I feel that with tools. I'm always like, why aren't tool shares more of a thing? In Portland, it seems really common. But here, I'm always like, we did our floors over the pandemic and needed all these tools. And it was like wild that that's not more of a resource that everybody uses.
And you buy it and use it once. Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. And it goes in your garage or whatever.
Yeah. What is that angle saw that we bought the reciprocating little saw?
Yeah.
I don't know what we're going to use that for again. And kind of while we're kind of edging into it, you know, this podcast is about sustainability and really about how we all can be incorporating sustainability into our lives, individually, collectively, the family scale, at the community scale. But a lot of people, and even people listening to this podcast, don't necessarily know what that means. And I think everybody's got a really different definition. And I'm curious if you all have a definition of sustainability, and I'm sure it's informed by the work you've been doing at EE.
That's tough. I mean, it's not tough. It's just for me, sustainability and the way I've been trying to like refocus, or like the thing that I've been looking at it or looking into a lot, is kind of specifically clothes. I've been spending a lot of time thinking about, you know, all of these clothes that I have and where did they come from? And not only like how sustainable am I in my practices after I buy them, but how sustainable is the process before they even got to me, which I think is something that's kind of a missing loop for a lot of people. And then I've been learning to make my own clothes. So then utilizing reused materials. So that's something that I've been focusing on. But like, I guess zooming out, I think sustainability is finding a way to utilize the things that are already around you without at the root, you know, without more material needing to be made. Basically, it's being more resourceful, I think, in a way.
Yeah, that's great. That ties into the conversation we had with Kate Gertner about, you know, end-to-end, you know, kind of supply chain awareness. Like, okay, where these are my jeans? How did they get here? And I found out that skinny jeans are way less resistant to wear than like denim jeans were made just from like straight up long staple cotton, you know, dyed with renewable indigo, and they last forever. They're stiff as boards, which I loved back in the 70s when I was first wearing jeans, those Levi's 501s that you could kind of like stand up. but these softer skinny jeans, and which I like because they fit my middle-aged figure a little bit better, that lycra in them makes them just wear out so much faster within a year or two. And I was like, oh, I'd never thought about that, but Kate made me think about that. What about you, Jill? Do you have a definition, or do you have an area that you're most interested in thinking about?
I think for me, it's, well, on the clothes aspect, I was interviewing someone probably 8 years ago, and he said, I don't buy any clothes that aren't biodegradable. And that really struck a chord with me. It was like, wow, he said, I want to be able to throw them on the compost pile and have them be gone, you know, in a long time. But, and I really, that changed how, for shopping for me. And I, like Rachel, do a lot of thrift store shopping and clothes trades and everything. But it really, new clothes, I really try not to buy anything with poly, which is hard, right? Because we all love the Lycra. It's hard to find things that are biodegradable. So that's clothes wise. And I really try to live more, which is super hard because I drive a car, but live more in harmony with nature and working with nature instead of against it. So it's kind of like in permaculture, you observe the patterns in nature and then you try and design with those in mind, instead of so much of what we as consuming humans do is really we kind of do the opposite of how nature handles things. And so one definition of sustainability for me are the permaculture ethics of earth care, people care, fair share. I think that really sums up for me in short little sound bites, a really wonderful way to live. And I another thing, yeah, it's there. I love permaculture. Another thing that I really like is the idea of looking at nature and the world as a whole and not ignoring all the creatures and plants that we share the planet with. Because I think so much sustainability is like, if it's good for humans, you know, keeping us going and keeping the humans happy and living kind of resourcefully. But I think we also have to bring in the other creatures and plants that we share the planet with. Will our actions help them survive as well? And that makes living kind of hard. You have to be much more mindful, right?
Right, right. Can you say those three principles mm-hmm. of permaculture again?
Yeah, these are the ethics of permaculture. It's earth care, so taking care of the earth, people care, taking care of each other, and fair share. So that's like sharing the surplus and spreading the wealth of what we have on the planet.
So notions of equity and diversity are kind of mm-hmm. embodied in it. Oh, that's yes. great. I love it.
But I think you also, the thing that I have found, the tightrope act in all of this is that by being so mindful about all of this, you can end up just like, oh, I can't do anything. And I'm just going to curl up in a ball and watch Netflix. mm-hmm. Because it's too overwhelming, right?
Right. Stressful. Yeah. And also I found, and I am a culprit of this, like getting so focused in on the things that you make other people feel bad or like alienate people. I have found that definitely when I'm talking to friends about things that I'm really excited about, or I'm trying to explain something and I'm like, well, all of your clothes have, you know, this in it, and all clothes are awful and it's plastic in the water. And then it's like everybody feels stressed out and they, kind of like you're on a crusade in a way.
When they see you coming, they turn the other way.
Yeah, they're like, we gotta go.
they hide behind a newspaper. Yeah, it's that fine line between passion and zealotry mm-hmm. is a real challenge to walk, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys have any tips or hints for navigating that line?
Well, one of my teachers and mentors years ago told me, because I was like, oh, I'm so into organic gardening and I want to teach everyone and I want to show everyone how to compost. And he said, don't talk about it. Just make your garden so amazing and magical and beautiful that you lure them in. So your neighbors will be coming to you saying, wow, this really feels different here. What'd you do? And I just always think of that. Instead of hammering people, it's kind of like they're drawn to whatever you're doing because you're joyful and they can tell there's vibrance and life to it. So I always think of that.
Mm-hmm.
Any other tips, Rachel, or are you still trying to figure out how to keep your friends?
I'm definitely, definitely still trying to figure it out. You'd have to ask my friends how it's going. I think I am a big believer in sharing the things that we learn, like sharing our skills, and everybody has these things that they're so excited about. So I just try to, whenever I have the opportunity to invite someone into my creative space or to share in a way that is, you know, they have told me they're interested in it or anytime. I think that, so kind of sharing that energy and making it feel like something we can all learn and be excited about instead of like rules. And so being more curious than regimented.
Yeah, I think I'm trying to figure that line out too, especially my other gig is working with men to help them embrace, you know, a more sustainable and feminist version of masculinity, and shaking my finger at them and telling them that they're doing it wrong.
They love that.
They love that. That's what men love the most.
Please, sir, may I have another?
Yeah, but I think I can tell stories from that perspective of like what my life is like because of the changes that I've made. And it's the sacrifices. And I feel the same thing about sustainability, like the work that it takes to create a compost pile out back, you know, can seem like a lot and it does take, you know, some maintenance, but like the garbage doesn't smell bad in the kitchen because we're not putting mm-hmm. food scraps in the garbage. And the garbage only goes out to the right. goes out to the curb like half the weeks because most of it's going into the compost.
Right. So the big truck doesn't have to waste gas stopping in front of our house nearly as often. And yeah. we yeah. don't have to use our time to go or yeah. your time to go roll it out there.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Yeah. So there's definitely benefits for that.
There's all these little incremental tiny things that add up.
And they ripple out.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah, they ripple out. I don't think our neighbors are looking at our compost pile going like,
We should do that. Yeah, no, they're not.
Yeah,
that's
not
gosh.
Why we're moving. Yeah, yeah. And my garden's not beautiful enough to convince anybody.
Mine isn't either right now because it's so dry here. But I've had gardens like that where it does work. You know, do you have the neighbor coming down spraying Roundup down the road? And it's like, oh my gosh. And it's interesting. Yeah, it's, and I think that's part of it too. I think the biggest challenge we face with sustainability is community and getting along with other people. I think we can do our whole, you know, like I am just this eco groovy eco person that's doing my thing. And then it's like getting along with that neighbor who's spraying Roundup on the edge of your driveway. How do we bridge that gap and how do we connect and move forward together, mutually beneficial relationships?
That's such a huge part of why we're doing this podcast. You know, that's one of the big questions that we want to answer and really pick apart and ask, you know, a wide variety of guests, like, how do we get along? How do we make this work, you know, on a household level, on a community level, and then can we do it on a really big level that makes a huge impact?
The folks we've spoken to who are living in intentional communities and eco-villages, what we keep hearing over and over again is a lot of meetings.
Yeah, oh, no, not more meetings.
Oh, man.
But to talk a little bit more about the program you both work for, Explore Ecology, what drew you each, and I'd love to hear from both of you, what drew you into that mission, that program of environmental education?
Well, for years, I had been an environmental educator, and I had run a garden program at the juvenile hall right before I worked at Explore Ecology called Kale Not Jail, which we taught kids how to grow organic food, which was really fun. And then I think I saw I said to myself, I was out like digging a trench or something in the heat with the kids. I'm like, you know what? I think what I want to do is educate about the environment and not have to do like the hard work of physical work. I kind of put it out to the universe like that. My next job, I really just want to educate about the environment as a whole. And then I saw an ad for environmental educator at Explore Ecology. Back then it was Art from Scrap. And I applied and I started there as an environmental educator and then did PR part-time there on the side. Like I'd write press releases when I wasn't teaching. And so I kind of have done many aspects of Explore Ecology. I was environmental educator. I've been the volunteer coordinator and now I'm fully PR. And so what I love most about our organization is that we really have bridged ecology and art and kind of merged it together. And it kind of is like referencing what I said earlier. It's like the joyful aspects of sustainability is, you know, we do art workshops with kids. And while they're making art out of reuse materials, they're also learning about waste reduction. And then we're teaching kids in school gardens and they're learning how to nurture plants. And we always focus what our educators do, which I'm not now any longer an educator with them, but they focus on solutions. So little kids will be in these classes where they're learning about heavy subjects like climate change and, you know, all the pollution and the plastic in the ocean. But then we really stress, here's what you can do. And then we take them out to do a beach cleanup. And we had so many, and Rachel can attest to this, so many touching stories. When I was an educator, we would take kids out to the Santa Barbara Channel as part of our Flows to the Ocean program, learning about plastic in the ocean. But this was so wonderful because then they'd get to see, after learning about all these bad, heavy things about plastic in the water, they would actually get to see whales and dolphins. And one little boy, Rachel's heard this story like 10 million times. One little boy, I was out on the back of the boat with him and dolphins had just been swimming by and whales. And he was probably 10, I think. And he looked at me and he said, "Have you ever had one of those days?" And I said, "Oh, what?" And he said, "Like the best day of your life." And it was so touching. And I thought, we really do good work where we're taking kids outside and teaching them about the environment. So that's why I love Explore Ecology. We're solutions oriented. We're fun. We're creative. And yeah, it's a great organization.
We love that so much.
Yeah. Yeah. Big smiles over here. What about you, Rachel? How'd you get sucked in?
Yeah. So I was teaching at a summer camp and I was looking to kind of be at a more art-focused job. And I saw that Art from Scrap was looking specifically for somebody to do art programming. And funny enough, the director's son was in my summer camp. And so that was kind of my in. Yeah, it was very sweet. He was, I was like, hey. But what drew me to it definitely was...
Can you write
was,
me a reference?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, he did.
Yeah, no, he was sweet. He literally the first day of camp was hugging, like came to my group, said hello, went and gave a tree a hug. And I was like, what are you doing over here? He's like, I'm just saying hi to the tree. Sweetest thing. But then I was really excited to see the organization and kind of see what they were doing. And my background was more art than sustainability, environmental education. So I kind of got drawn into that and I've learned so much and kind of grown and kind of in the ways that I understand sustainability and my impact and the way I teach. I definitely teach art in a really different way than when I first started, a lot more open-ended, a lot more thinking towards, you know, how to be a little more creative with materials instead of just getting materials brand new from the craft store. So I've gotten a lot from the job and it's great. I get, you know, I'm organizing programs, but I used to be one of our garden educators that taught in a school classes. Now I'm teaching a garden art workshop where, like Jill was saying, we're kind of closing that loop where we're in the garden, but we're doing art projects all with natural materials. And natural dyes is kind of the series that we've been doing. And it's really fun to see students who are getting both that art and their garden, because they also have a garden teacher separate from me, you know, making those full circles and having all these great ideas. And, oh, we smashed plants, but, oh, can we make our own paints like I saw in this video? Just a lot of that loop closing of ideas and creativity, which is really fun.
Sounds. I yeah. want to come be in your class.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah. I'm really curious, though, Rachel. How has being a sustainability educator affected your own artwork?
Loads. So yeah, when I first started, I was really focused on printmaking. I was doing block printing. I was printing on fresh paper, and I still love that practice, and I love the work of it, but. Since then, I've really been drawn into fibers and I've seen, you know, that's something we get so much of in the store is old yarn, old scraps of fabric. And, you know, it's a high material intense kind of practice. So using that and trying to get creative, my house has like got a little mini art from scrap corner because I've got all of these things. But I think I have noticed that there's so much that already exists. And it feels like an extra creative challenge, which I have always liked. I love process stuff where you kind of have to like problem solve. So I've been able to see the opportunity in all of the different things that exist. And as a curator, because we have a little gallery space, I also get to see all the artwork that people are making. So I'm so inspired by all of these things and all this passion that people bring with all of these materials that are reused stuff. I mean, we've had some really cool stuff, miniatures that were made out of found objects. Like this woman found things on the ground, canisters and leaves and acorns, and made little miniatures that were really sweet. We've had artists who do beautiful
art out of plastic they found on the beach.
Sea plastic. Yeah. An artist who does beautiful collage, kind of sculptural stuff out of it. I mean, there's just so many things and people are so, I mean, artists are so fun to talk to. They're so passionate. They have so many ideas. So that's been a big inspiration too.
Yeah. Many times when I see Rachel, her hands are blue from indigo.
It's like the going joke. Cause I'll have like blue hands. It's like, oh, cool. Rachel taught an indigo class.
So indigo is a plant-based dye, right? This color. Yeah. Kind of blue jeans color, right? So are you making indigo or are you...
So indigo is like the trickiest of the natural dyes. Most natural dyes, you grow the plant and you boil it kind of like a tea, and then you immerse the material in that. So like eucalyptus is one that I use a lot, or marigold flowers. Indigo is like the special case where that doesn't work. You have to grow it, go through a whole process to separate the indigo from the rest of the plant. It's a pretty involved process. And then that creates, some people use it as a paste or powder that you can then create a dye bath out of. So all of this to say, I haven't been able to grow enough indigo plant here yet to go through the whole process myself. So I'm using indigo powder from some different resources online and stuff. There's some really cool people. There is a farm up on Savi Island in Portland, and I'm forgetting their name right now. but they're doing some indigo growing and producing of paste for natural dyers. There's some places, there's a Botanic Colors, I think, out of the UK that also does that indigo, organic indigo paste as well. So working on it, but haven't gotten there yet.
But Southern California, eucalyptus is everywhere. So that's readily available. Marigold flowers, marigolds are easy to grow.
Easy. Sourgrass, which kind of grows like a weed here, is another really good one that's everywhere. Avocado pits are something, it's a food waste that everybody's got, and onion skins. So there's so much, something that I'm always telling my students is like, colors are everywhere. They're all around you. You just have to check it out and find them.
You have to just mine your compost pile, kind of.
Yeah, I'm hoping that our listeners are kind of looking around their houses and looking around their yards and thinking like, oh, I love that idea. The colors are all around us. Like, oh, I can do this. I don't have to pay somebody else. I don't have to buy it from somebody else. I could conceivably dye my own clothes with stuff from my yard. That's awesome.
Right. And just what kind of a cool weekend activity to do with your kids, something that's fun that, you know, maybe doesn't take any money or much money. And like, what a fun exploration to do instead of going to the mall or whatever.
Right. Right. Rachel, are there how-to videos or anything like that on the website?
Explorecology, I think the only how-to on our blog is a natural, like, Easter egg dyeing kind of thing, so eggs.
Oh, cool. Well, that's coming up.
That's pretty timely.
So that would be a great one. And that has all the info on how to, like, make the dye itself. You just would have to learn how to prep fabrics, which Dharma Trading Company is, like, a big online reseller. They have tons of great tutorials. Another person, if you're on Instagram, Jill and I actually took our workshop one time. The Dogwood Dyer is somebody who does a lot of really good natural dye stuff. That's our Instagram handle.
Sasha Dewar is another wonderful. It's just this color bath is amazing. Her picture's on her Instagram too. It's just, I want to dive in.
they're so beautiful. And you've interviewed her before, right, Jill?
Yes. Yeah. And Rebecca Burgess of Fibershed, where they have really close the loop with clothes, where they grow, they have wool from local farmers and they mill everything locally. And then she dyes everything naturally up in Marin County.
Yeah. Fibershed is such an inspiring project.
Fibershed. So like watershed or food shed.
Exactly.
Fibershed.
Well, the yellow of your walls that I can see, that vibrant yellow is really, that's my favorite natural dye. I think is sourgrass. We've done that together, Rachel. It just, you cannot, if you're ever depressed, just dye with sourgrass. It's like so alive and happy. Isn't it? It's the happiest little plant dye.
That's a whole new avenue of art therapy. I love it.
So we're going to have to, when we move, we're going to have to find out what our fiber and dye shed is.
Yeah.
What are the dye plants in upstate
that.
New York?
I love that.
I mean, I know acorns and, oak tannins.
I do have 100 pounds of fine merino wool in my basement.
Ooh,
so.
Oh my gosh.
Yet to be dyed.
Redwood cones. Redwood cones are beautiful too. Kind of a nice gold brown.
it's so fun.
Thank you for listening to this episode. And thank you for joining us on this investigation into the question of our generation. How are we going to live in a way that can last? We hope you'll stay with us. So subscribe. It's free. It's easy. Just click the subscribe button on your podcast app to make sure you get every episode. We also invite you to join the community that's growing up around this podcast.
Subscribe to the twice monthly newsletter at here-together.us/join and come chat with us on the Clubhouse app. Clubhouse is this amazing, highly participatory, audio-only social media app, and I love it. We're extending the Here Together experience there every week. You can join the Here Together Clubhouse Club. We're there every Sunday at 9 a.m. Mountain Time. If you're already on Clubhouse, search for and join the Here Together Club, and you'll be notified whenever we open the room.
It's easy. And if Clubhouse is new to you, don't worry. We wrote a simple Clubhouse user guide that you can find at here-together.us/clubhouse. We'll be having these same valuable conversations with people who are already designing and living the solutions, and you can join in. Ask questions, share your thoughts, and be a part of the Here Together community in real time. Or you can just listen while you're doing the dishes. Whichever mode works for you is fine. Just join us.
And be sure to check the show notes for more on the podcast guest and related resources. It's easy. Just click the notes tab on your podcast app or go to here-together.us/pod for all the details, links, and whatnot. Now back to the show.
I'm curious how these ideas of sustainability and upcycle and permaculture are rippling out into your community. What are you seeing?
Well, I know many of the, especially as an educator, you get firsthand experience of this, but I know, like, I would be out and about in town and we would see 30,000 kids a year, but children would run up to you and say, and I'm sure this has happened to you, Rachel, Jill, do you remember me? And you're like, uh-huh. Yeah, yes, of course. And then it's like, look, and I had one child pull out a metal clean canteen and then say, my whole family bought them. We got rid of the plastic. So things like that, it's definitely happening. And I would say also with the garden program, don't you think, Rachel, a lot of kids go home and then talk to their family about growing food at home. And many families have told us they've started gardens.
Oh, wow. That's great. Just great to have that concrete impact on how families are running their lives. Yeah.
Yes. And also have replaced, like, didn't know, like, oh, Roundup is bad, or, oh, these fun, you know, herbicides and pesticides aren't good to use. So I think that's also had an impact as well.
Great. Single-handedly bringing down DuPont.
Mm-hmm.
I'm embarrassed. I believed the hype that Roundup was not a problem. And there's some persistent frickin' weeds here in Arizona that I've used it on, but no more.
Mm-mm. I know it's tough, right? And everyone believed that. And I think it's relearning, right? It's having to relearn different ways to deal with challenges.
Yeah. So now I just have to keep my hoe sharp. That's the that's the task now.
And
yeah.
Hot water and vinegar is another one that can help.
Oh, I wonder if it would get that, whatever that little thing is that grows in the gravel. It's probably a dye plant. We should probably be cultivating, yeah. Right? Who knows?
Dig it out.
Right. I know that COVID-19 and the shutdowns affected a lot of nonprofits, especially ones working with education and kids and bringing people into things. What did you all do to respond?
Yeah, it was definitely a trick. We kind of took it one step at a time. All of our programs were definitely paused there for a while. The first thing that we started up virtually was online art classes. So we used to have weekly art workshops for kids. And then we said, we can do this at home. So we started doing weekly art workshops, free for the community or free for anybody. And every workshop focused on, like, what are things that are at people's houses? So we're not getting complicated art materials. We're doing cereal boxes and markers, and how can we make it really clear that you can kind of use anything, and we're going to go through this project. So that's where we started. We started having those. They were a lot of fun. Our educators that do our field trips started doing Zoom field trips from home, and they had their little project where they taught the kids how to make a little, I think it was a seed container, like a little start thing that you could plant a little plant in out of a toilet paper or tube. And then I think our garden educators, the garden program, they did a little bit of everything. Some people were making YouTube videos about compost to share with students. Some people were doing Zoom classes when the schools were able to. Some people were eventually going to the gardens, because we had to, you know, when we were able to still keep these gardens alive, and there's still all this wonderful stuff. So they would harvest it and have pickup tables for parents. So, you know, we did our best, and I think we did some really cool stuff through it, but it was a lot of, you know, like, everyone went through figuring it out and thinking on our feet and trying new things.
So what did you and your educators learn through that pivot?
I think I learned the importance of kind of just, you know, figuring it out as you go, which has always been an ethos of mine. So I guess I just reinstated that for myself. And also something I learned is the way we can all be each other's teachers. We usually keep our age groups really separate. So the kids had kid workshops and the adults had adult workshops, and online, at least for art, because it wasn't kind of part of the school day, it was just open. Everybody, it was kids, you know, six-year-olds, and it was people who are older who just are looking to connect and, you know, haven't seen somebody, and everybody was on one art workshop and sharing with each other and talking to each other. We had one time a kid had his he was really excited about sharks. It was a shark. We were making animals and he was really hyped about sharks and he had a shark book and he was telling us all of his shark facts. And I believe one of the adults that was on had a biology background and she was telling him her shark info and really getting into it. And they just had like their own aside where they were just going deep into shark info. And he was so happy and she really connected. I think that kind of, you know, you forget those intergenerational connections are important and it's hard sometimes to make those. So I thought that was kind of a takeaway that I found that was something that our programs haven't had so much.
I love that. I love that flexibility and creativity and letting letting things emerge.
And an unexpected benefit. That's so cool.
Yeah. What did you see, Jill?
I was just going to add one thing to what Rachel said, but I think we covered it. It's just one other thing we offered was the Explore Ecology Clubhouse, which was like, we got so many calls from parents like summer camp. It was like, it's a little risky. So we just offered a free summer camp online, which was fun. It was a lot of art and garden. But I think what Rachel said really summed it up. And I think we just learned to be flexible, right? And to turn everything into a virtual experience. which is hard for people who love nature, right? You want to be outside. And there you are like editing videos on garden tours. But it was great. And I think people really responded to the art because it was free and it was so inclusive. And remember the one woman that came every time and she was up in what, Washington State, I think?
She was in, something.
Or some Oregon, I forget.
She was away from here and had been in Santa Barbara previously years ago, but now wasn't. Yeah, every single week she would alter each of the projects to be something that she could turn into a card or a letter because she wanted to send correspondences to her friends. So whatever we were doing, she would put it on a card or something so that she could send it to her friends because she wanted art that she wasn't going to just, you know, that she could utilize. So all of it was some sort of a mailable thing, which I thought was really sweet. And she was there every week. It was really fun.
Yeah. Yeah. We became kind of non-geographic, even though we were stuck in our homes. We were able to, you know, watch the Met opera for free. Or, I mean, I went out when I first started planning this interview with you all, or even before we got to that stage, I was just looking at the website and I saw one of the garden tours and it might have been you, Jill. Somebody was walking through the garden and it had been like nobody had been there for a while and it was overgrown and crazy. But whoever was doing the filming, their energy was contagious, just the excitement at being back in the garden and seeing all this growth and seeing all this greenery. And the gratitude and the engagement and the desire to share just came right through the camera. And, you know, this is months later and I still remember it. And I'm in Arizona.
Right. Yeah.
You know, one thing I think we did gain too, Rachel, and tell me if you think this too, is how loved we are in the community as an organization, because people really felt it when Art from Scrap was not open. It was just like, oh, what are we going to do? It was like they were just, some of them were distraught. It was like, oh no, you know? And so that was really a wonderful reflection back for Explore Ecology, is like, we really are our summer camps and our classes and the art workshops. I think our community really appreciates them.
You know what? I don't think we've even really described what the heck Art from Scrap is. We didn't talk about it in the intro.
We talked
about all the education, but I mean, so describe, Rachel, what we would see if we were to walk in the doors of the Art from Scrap reuse store.
So Art from Scrap truly has a little bit of everything. So you walk in the doors and there's some antique stuff. You go to the left and there's lots of more of our bits that are creative. So there's metal pieces like old screws and nails, but then pieces from different things. There's plastic caps to things. We get a lot of donations from businesses. So it's like bulk. So like big bins of stuff. So there's lots of colors and there's lots of things and there's lots of textures. It's hard to describe all the stuff because there truly is so much of it. And then there's also yarn. So we have tons of fiber stuff, tons of yarn, tons of fabric. There's always some random thing that you have never expected. Maybe we used to have a mannequin that was in there for a very long time that was all painted and pretty cool. It was very random. Or maybe it's
the heads.
Yeah. A bunch of just like, they were like
heads.
Styrofoam heads. So it's everything.
Heads.
It's all stuff that had a previous life that, it was so many. They all were like lined up in a row.
Love it.
So it's part thrift store, part horror shop,
part mystery.
Part mystery tour, yeah.
Well, that's what I always say. It's like, if you've got enough of anything, you've got an art project.
Absolutely. Yeah. Even if it's just like fabric scraps, stringing them on string, or bottle caps, stringing them on a string. Like, that's cool. That's fun garland. Like, just like you said, anything can be an art project.
I did a little bit of live action role playing with kids. This amazing person would organize it, and costuming. Kelly's not a costumer, but she had saved all of these kind of elongated oval foil lids from these little single serving cat food things that we had for a while, and I just shook my head as she was saving them, but she turned all of those into this coat of like scale mail wow. over this vest that just, I looked awesome.
So cool.
I totally won the costume contest that year. Yeah.
You're a natural, art from scrap natural.
Oh yeah. Yeah. We are kindred spirits for sure. And I will be sending you a box of stuff before.
they're not taking any donations. Yeah. You guys are full up, right?
We are.
The website
for now.
Says you're full up.
Come on.
Yeah. I think we're accepting them soon. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think we can't call it a business plan yet, but part of the the business vision for buying a building and doing adaptive reuse in upstate New York includes a reuse store.
Yeah, I wanted to do what you're doing for years. Like, my mom and I have talked about it, and you know, because we're both kind of OCD, you know, sorting maniacs, and just to have, you know, clean bins of all the things that like, people throw away and don't even think twice about it. I save caps off the you know, milk jug and the little plug things that you pull out with the little loop. Like, those are super cool. And toilet rolls and, you know, plastic containers that can be reused, and just anything and everything.
You just described the store.
Yeah, you did a that's a perfect store description. And the trick is, you just got to organize it. So if you've got that skill, you've got it all. Yeah, then you're set.
There'll be a lot of businesses, because in Art from Scrap, when we started, it was almost all businesses donating, because there was so much industry around. Not so much, but a lot more industry. And so that really helps businesses who would have to pay to haul this away or recycle. And so I would say, what, a third maybe of the stuff in Art from Scrap now, you walk in, you're like, what is this thing? Because it's like a it's like a piece of a machine that like is no longer being used. So it's a lot of mystery items are filling.
Just today, somebody was asking me that. They're like, we have big bins of these. They're like paper triangles that, I guess a three-dimensional triangle that kind of looks like a slice of cheese. Like, there's holes in the paper. And we've got loads of them. Somebody's like, what is this? And I was like, no idea. Been using them, been doing projects with them for years.
It can be whatever you want.
Nobody knows.
It's a dream catcher holder. Can't you tell?
Right, right. What do you think it is?
Do you get lots of teachers who come get stuff for their classes? And
yeah, we have a school materials program where schools can sponsor, like they have to do it. It's per student. And then it allows the teachers to come in and get our bulk materials kind of whenever at no cost to them. So that is a cool program that we do. And teachers really do great. It's cool to see them gathering stuff and talk about what project they're trying to get their classes to do.
We're gonna have to buy Rachel a train ticket.
I know, right?
to come out to Utica to set us up. Because this store is really important. If we don't manage to figure out a way to use all this stuff that Kelly has saved, our relationship will probably be endangered. Because.
Yeah, I know that I can only bring home a certain amount from the thrift store or I will be left.
I have the same thing with my partner. It's like I either have to get rid of something or I'm not bringing things home or I'm keeping them in the back of my car to like sneak them in.
Yeah.
A limit has been set and I have
met
it. Yeah, don't worry about it. Don't ask too many questions.
Yeah, back to that question at the beginning, like sharing and giving and how do we navigate that?
Yeah. And just how do we navigate stuff is also a question of sustainability kind of what you were saying, Jill, about, or no, you were saying, Rachel, about just consuming less or finding a way to consume in a way that doesn't spur more production.
Right.
But how do we have an economy at the same time? You know, it's like, so complicated.
Just grow a food forest.
Yeah, food forest.
Yeah.
There
yeah.
it is.
Yeah.
Especially as a creative person where you want to keep creating, like how do you not be creating things that just go to waste, or creating things that are excess is something that I find is challenging because you don't want to lose that part of yourself. So I don't know the solve on it.
Yeah.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Just keep creating. We'll figure it out. You know, speaking of food forests and permaculture again, Jill, I just wanted to give you a chance to talk about your two podcasts. It's we hardly ever get to interview other podcasters. So it's just really interesting, like what your experience has been and you know, do you have a favorite interview that you've done recently? Or well, first tell us about the two podcasts, and then if you've got a favorite, yeah.
I have worked on produced and hosted Sustainable World Radio since 2004. It was started at a local radio station, community radio station. And then my guests were so amazing. I thought I have to get the word out to the world. They're just so incredible what they're saying. And so I just went home and Googled how to get your radio show online and then submitted my show to iTunes at the time. And it was so funny because my show, like everyone had these professional logos and everything. And mine was up there. It was a picture of a tree with no name on it. I didn't know what I was doing. And I just started I followed step by step, got them up there. So it's been a journey and it's been wonderful. The tech part has been the challenging part, which I don't know if you three have experienced that, but yeah. So it's wonderful. And I've interviewed permaculture teachers, from all around the world. One of my favorite interviews is with Julius Pitty, who's a permaculture teacher and community, which you would love talking to him because he organizes his community and works on nonviolent communication. And he has turned these barren areas of land in Zimbabwe into these beautiful verdant. He regenerates land basically and teaches others how to do it. So Julius's interview is really one of my favorite ones. And then I have another podcast, The Plant Report, Every Plant Has a Story, where I just talk about plants for about between a half hour and an hour. I either interview someone or just talk on about the plants because I love plants. So that's been super, super fun.
My mom and your mom would both like that one.
Yeah.
Oh, I know. Podcasting's amazing, right? Haven't you? I mean, I know we all can attest because you have listeners from all around the world. It's just incredible.
Yeah.
A great tool to have.
But I really want to hear about copper and heat.
That's your jam.
First of all, tell me about the name and then tell me about the podcast.
So Copper and Heat, I wish I had come up with the name, but I work on it with my best friend and her husband, two of my best friends. She was working in a Michelin star kitchen and was a woman in fine dining kitchens and kind of was thinking a lot about her experiences, and her husband, Ricardo, and I are both podcast nerds, and we would nerd out about podcasts all the time. And he came up with it, copper, the copper pans, heat, the heat of the kitchen. So the heat of the flames of the stoves and stuff. So the first season where we started was Katie, who's my friend, telling her story about what her experience as a woman in fine dining and in kitchens. And the goal was to kind of make a podcast by a chef for by a cook for cooks. And it started with them sending me their episode edits, and I would just listen to them like six times in a row and be like, oh, well, this is my note and this is my note and this is my note. And then eventually they kind of brought me on in more of a formal capacity. And now we're working on, you know, more seasons. We're just about to start production for season four. And we do other production for other podcasts and other shows. We've been doing a really fun kind of interview style show with Chef Preeti Mistry. We did a really fun ASMR food show this right in the holidays. It's called Sounds Like the Holidays, and it would be different chefs cooking, and we did all of the recording for all the food sounds. So it's all kind of food stuff, and it's been really fun to
podcast. I saw a picture on the Instagram feed of these two mics pointed at this beautiful looking grilled cheese sandwich, and I'm just like, oh, I didn't even need to hear it to just be like, oh,
right?
Yes, the sound of a grilled cheese.
Cutting the grilled cheese was like the best sound that we got, that crispy. We were like covering mics because I was all stressed out about, we wanted to get the sound of boiling water. And I was like, well, this steam is going to mess up my mic. And I just had gotten a nice mic finally. And I was like, okay, we'll cover it in plastic wrap. So I have these pictures of me with a plastic wrap covered mic, like almost in a pot of boiling water. It was outrageous, but was really fun. Got some really great sounds, some really weird sounds. stirring a pot of, one of the things was lasagna, so stirring a pot of meat sauce was definitely a specific sound.
That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I love it. I love it. And Copper and Heat won a James Beard Award. I didn't know that podcasts could win a James Beard Award.
Right. James Beard Awards for media. They do food media stuff. I think the podcasting one is pretty new, but our first season, so the one, it's called Be a Girl, we submitted and we won, which is amazing. It's such an honor. I'm so proud of Katie and Ricardo and to be a part of a team because, you know, we're just a little three-person operation, and it's pretty cool.
Yeah, that sounds huge.
Yeah, yeah. And you're using podcasting in a way to shine a light on an industry in a different way. You know, those of us who are kind of, kitchen geeks and, you know, read Kitchen Confidential and, you know, grieved when he killed himself. Blank in his name right now, but.
Yeah, Bourdain.
Anthony Bourdain. But just the sampling of episodes of yours that I've listened to, you're like talking about, you know, equity and sexism and, you know, response to COVID and people being underpaid and overworked and just this kind of like, I guess, social justice around the kitchen that makes me think differently in the way that like, oh, Lycra in my jeans is not a good thing, like made me think differently as well. So I really appreciate what you're doing in all of those different spheres, in the permaculture sphere, Jill, and looking at, you know, talking about plants and raising them up with your podcasts and like I said, shining a light, you know, behind the swinging doors into the kitchen. It's very much for other people in that industry, but I felt like a little fly on the wall. It was great.
Well, you were in the industry too.
I was in, that's right.
Yes,
I was in,
really?
I blanked all that out. Not, you know, I wasn't working at any Michelin starred places, but I've been a kitchen manager and a waiter and a chef and
And almost everybody's worked some kind of a restaurant job, yeah, even just for a short time, enough to kind of relate to it.
Okay, well, now our listeners are bored because we're talking about podcasting.
Yep.
Want to do number 11?
Okay, so
do you think they can pull it off?
I'm really curious. We ask this question. A lot of people don't allow themselves to fully go there and inhabit their imaginations and inhabit the future. But we're just going to keep asking it because someday somebody's going to really blow our minds.
An artist in a public relations.
I know, they've got imaginations.
Gardner, they got to be able to do this, right?
They're upbeat, they're hopeful.
Yep.
Oh no, my fun. Internet's going out. My internet's going out.
No, you guys can do this. So what we want you to do is just let your imagination really rip. Go into the future, 30 years. People are doing permaculture like full on. They're utilizing weird leftover stuff fully. What does the world look like? Everybody's on board with what you guys are teaching.
Oh, it's greener. It's greener, and there's the watersheds are being restored because people are capturing rainwater and respecting water and natural elements and each other. And I mean, I could go on forever on this, but I don't want to bore everyone. But I just picture a greener, more plant-filled planet, which would bring in more moisture, which would make people happier, which would, I just wrote something about this, but I just envision like riding your bike down the street, less cars, the freeway isn't crowded because people have chosen to like ride their bikes. And those who can't ride bikes are being ridden along by teenagers who can ride them. Like, I just envision like, how could we make this work? And people are joyful and connecting, and there's village centers where we can all gather, or, you know, town, city centers, where it's kind of like city repair in Portland, where they really made that a vital part of their city. And so I think there's so many solutions out there that could, I mean, I don't want to hog this whole thing, but that can paint, that can show us the way to this picture of what we all want. And I see a lot more laughter and relaxation in 4-day work weeks. And what else? Let's see. And food. And not everyone's a gardener. And so huge community gardens, right? So people, we can't grow all our own food. If you can't, you're not going to grow grains probably. So supporting local farmers. Farmers are like rock stars. I just feel like I can see it, and I feel like it's I feel like we're at the point where it could be very close, or we're going to veer way off. And so I'm hoping that we all can feel that we can all be participants in the regeneration of community and nature.
Awesome.
Sorry for the rant.
No,
all right. No, that's what we're at. Right, that's what Kelly wanted
yeah.
from.
Yeah. My answer, Rachel, is
what
you got?
Jill said. No. I totally agree with everything Jill was saying. It's beautiful. And I think that for me, kind of like the space and time, like Jill was saying, like people, not everybody's good at everything. And I wish people who felt really passionate about things, like people who are gardeners or people who are seamstresses, had the space and time to get to do their thing in an intentional and like fulfilling way. So I think people having the space and time to get into their craft and get into being able to utilize that skill and share it with others and not feel that capitalist need to like do and produce. And it has to be flawless and it has to be yesterday. And I need it done right now. Just less and time and a little more patience from everyone and a little more just connecting back to nature, both in the space and also in the things ebb and flow. There's seasons, sometimes they're slow. And I think that that's something the pandemic has, or this time since the pandemic has taught me, is like, it's okay to be on a different schedule. And it's okay to have seasons of life where maybe one season is a little sleepier than the other. And like, I think that would be a nice, if I'm adding to Jill's future that she drew out for us so beautifully, that would be my addition, is like a little more space and a little more craft.
I love it.
What do you think?
I think we award them the Charles's Beard Award.
I know. Yeah. Charles's Beard Award. Yes.
Yeah. Nobody has ranted
close.
So beautifully.
Yeah. Plus, I want to live in that world.
Yeah. Right.
I know.
Right.
I can feel it.
100%.
And this, you can cut this out of the podcast, but another mentor was telling, when I was doing a permaculture design course with him, he said, I had a nightmare last night. And I'm like, what was it? And he said, I dreamt that like all the leaders of the world were like, what we're doing is not working. What do we do, guys? You're saying you know what to do. Tell us what to do. And he's like, oh, shit.
Love it.
I know.
Right. Careful what you wish for, right? But yeah, no, it's, I think,
I
yeah. Love it. Yeah. I want to live in that world. Mm-hmm. And I want to live with people who are as passionate as Rachel and Jill are about this, because it is going to take passion to push us through the glue of the status quo, right? Into something that's more fluid and can ebb and flow, like Rachel's talking about. So really appreciate you spending all this time with us and inspiring us with the work you've done and the podcasting you're doing. And how can people find out more? How can people participate in the things you're doing?
They can visit exploreecology.org is one way. And then do you want our personal websites too? Or okay, sustainableworldradio.com.
For the podcast, it's copperandheat.com. And also a good way to stay up with art from scrap stuff and explore ecology stuff is social media. So there's a channel for each. So if you're more inclined to the gardens and sustainability stuff, explore ecology, it's just explore ecology, and then art from scrap for kind of the different art projects, the different things. If you love to see the things that show up in the store, Nicole, who is our store manager, does a great job of showing all the cool things that show up, all the wild things. So those are good ways to stay in touch too.
Excellent. And listeners, we'll put all of those links in the show notes. So please don't let just listening to this podcast be the end of your experience with Explore Ecology and with these ideas and with permaculture and these wonderful podcasters,
yes,
podcast producers. Go ahead and follow those links and engage with what you see there. Give them some likes and some suggestions, mm-hmm, and some comments on some their social
money.
Media. Give them some money. Donate. What the heck? What
Support
the heck?
School gardens. Love How it. Could you not?
Support school gardens. Right. God, send kids out to the beach to clean up and watch dolphins.
I want to go clean up the beach, yeah, and watch dolphins.
Can you guarantee a dolphin? No, you can't guarantee a dolphin.
No, but they often come, don't you think? They're usually pretty good.
They're usually like, hey, guys, we heard you were going to be here for a field trip.
Right? They knew something fun was going on. Right?
And I do think, and it could just be me, you know, making this up, but I feel like on the boat trips, the humpback whales would often be so curious because every time they would do it, the whales would do anything, what, 70 kids would scream and yell and just be like, And so the whales, one trip, they spent like 45 minutes with us, which was so cool and came very close. There's great photos of that on our Instagram. But yeah, it's just, yeah, it's amazing. Yeah, kids, the future
second,
leaders.
Second graders kind of sing at the range of humpback whales, don't they?
Maybe. Yeah. I think
really
you figured it out.
Yeah.
Oh, well, thank you so much for this opportunity. You two are definitely great at what you do.
Thank you. We like it. We hope and trust that you got something of value and something actionable to aid and inspire you on your sustainability journey. We invite you to continue with us on this expedition into positive impact and more satisfactory, satisfying, and sustainable living.
Subscribe to the twice monthly newsletter. It's short and sweet, full of useful resources, and of course, my favorite part, a gratuitous podcast picture. And remember to join the Here Together Club on Clubhouse.
You can also engage with us on Twitter at HereTogether1. We'll be there sharing climate news and really important photos of sustainable alpaca farms.
Yay!
Go ahead and tag us on tweets that you think should get more attention. Again, we're building a community of newly empowered local climate action takers and personal sustainability makers.
Together we got this.
The Here Together podcast is a project of Rocket Feather Creative.